You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
And, of course, his lovely co-host, Paul Lauzon. I am Commander Tom Garcia. Welcome to the American Hour. Paula, how are you tonight?
Doing excellent, Tom. It's an overcast 42 up here in the greater Boston area, and I see that your boy Santorum's on the rise, and he surges ahead of Romney in the national polls. The latest Quinnipiac poll from Ohio shows Santorum ahead with 36%, Romney with 29%, and he's a trusted conservative. He's a regular guy that doesn't have much money to back him the way Romney does. Al Sharpton says he's authentic, he's extreme. His contraception and his social issues are way to the right, and he's very much so extreme on gay marriage. Sharpton had mentioned that America is much more conservative on social issues than they'd like to think, and that's according to Joe Scarborough. The media has always had a blind spot on social issues. Within the same realm, Obama is going strong against the GOP. The CBS News New York Times poll has President Obama beat all four general election matchups, with Obama 48% against Romney with 42%. Against Santorum, Santorum's got 41% against Obama's 49%, Ron Paul's 39% with Obama's 50%, and Gingrich is 36% against Obama's 54%. The presidential job approval rating, people are giving him 50%. With his handling of the economy, he gets a 44% approval and a 50% disapproval. He enjoys the highest economy approval mark since August of 2010. The February GOP primary polls, the four being the Pew, the Gallup, the CBS News, New York Times, and CNN, BBC, show Santorum either slightly ahead or in a statistical tie with Romney. 55% backing Santorum say they strongly support their candidate, and the Super PAC attack pro-Romney group targets Santorum with an ad. Regarding the Obama budget, he's unveiled a $3.8 trillion budget for 2013. What the country's focused on is the economy. Obama plans to let the Bush tax cuts expire. Senator Pat Toomey, who was a Republican from Pennsylvania, mentions that it's a failure of leadership. He also said that Obama's taken the exact opposite approach of that of every commission that's looked at tax reform, and what every bipartisan group has said is that they should do is simplify the code, broaden the base on which tax rates are applied, but apply a lower tax rates because that encourages economic growth. He's calling for those rates to go higher, and he wants to layer the tax on investment and on capital gains and investment.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, exactly. You've got to lower those taxes. Some people talk about, oh, well, cut out the loopholes and the deductions. Well, that just goes to their bottom line, and we, the consumer, pay for that. So investment, that's the key. Investment, investment, investment. It doesn't matter whether you're retired and have investments in pension funds, gold, Coca-Cola, oil companies. You're investing. That helps the economy. But if we start taxing you because you're a millionaire, billionaire that makes $200,000, then that hurts the economy, absolutely. So Obama has an ideological bend towards leveling and making everybody the same. You know, in China, they all used to wear sort of the same clothing. That was required of them. In Cuba, they're all poor. Everybody's the same, poor. That's what he sees as fair, except for the elitists like, you know, Fidel Castro sitting in his mansion, on his compound, or, you know, leaders of the Communist Party in Russia or China that live in palaces and have everything. But see, that they deserve all that stuff because they know better than we know what's best for us. And what's best for us is to all be the same. So, yeah, you're right, Paul. Well, tonight we're going to talk about where the president gets his authority to dictate what insurance companies do or don't do, you know, in terms of what they services they provide and everything else. Now, I don't want to put you on the spot, but, I mean, Paul, what authority does he have? We've gone through the president's authority in the past to see what authority he has, and it's very, very little. But there is a, I guess if you want, it's not even a clause. People will call it a clause, but it's at the Section 3 out of 4 sections, and the 4th section is talks about impeachment of the president or the vice president. But Section 3, at the very end of it, it says, the president shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed and shall commission all the officers of the United States. Okay, so commissioning them, I got commissioned technically by the president when I went into the Navy. But that he shall ensure, take care. It doesn't even say ensure. It says take care that the laws be faithfully executed. Okay, so who makes the laws? Well, Congress and or the Senate propose laws, and then they vote on it, and if it can pass both houses, it goes to the president, who then signs it. Now, why does that give him authority? Well, because once laws are in place, the president's job in the executive branch and with all of the bureaucracies that they have are to make sure that the laws that Congress has passed and he has signed get enacted, take place, happen. So he is sort of an executive in that he oversees the execution of laws taking place and being put into place. Now, how does that give him authority to tell stuff, tell corporations, et cetera, what they'll do? Well, what it means is if there's a law that gets put in place, like no trucks, like the kind of trucks driven by UPS and FedEx, can exceed 65 miles per hour on the highway. It doesn't matter what the posted speed limit is. They cannot exceed 65 miles per hour. You know, he could put together a commission of actual task force to get out on the highways and ensure that doesn't happen. Now, we have, you know, police forces. The other thing he could do, I mean, you know, state patrol, highway patrol, et cetera, he could find some money in his budget and give it to the states to specifically look at that more so than they are. I mean, so there, you see, he's got some leeway in how the laws are executed. So what is it in Obamacare that allows him to tell insurance companies what they can do? Well, here it is precisely. The Affordable Care Act ensures that Americans will have essential health benefits. Essential. Now, here are the categories, and listen carefully, everybody out there. Number one, ambulatory patient services. Okay, that would be heart. You know, you have a heart attack, or you need you got problems with your heart, et cetera. Ambulatory patient services. Emergency services, hospitalization, maternity and newborn care. Okay, so you're pregnant, you get maternity care and newborn care. That doesn't specify precisely what happens, and this is what happens when Congress passes a law that is sort of, you know, ambiguous. I mean, it sounds specific, but I mean, what do they have to provide, Paula, in when it comes to maternity and newborn care? Does the government, I mean, do insurance companies have to provide a live-in nanny? That doesn't specify. It just says maternity and newborn care. Okay. But here's where the president could come along and go like, yeah, I believe that, you know, when Congress passed this law, they wanted it to include a nanny, a full-time nanny, until the kid reaches the age of 2. Well, somebody's got to pay for that. But remember, what I read out of the Constitution says that the laws be faithfully executed. Faithfully means with the intent that they were written. But this president doesn't care what the intent is. He cares what his intent is. So he's violating the Constitution when he reads between the lines and creates new intent. Okay, I'm going to continue on. Number 5, mental health and substance abuse or substance use disorder services, including behavioral health treatment. you're depressed, you're, you know, going nuts, whatever. Okay. Prescription drugs. Rehabilitative and habilitative services and devices. So, you know, you hurt your knee or you have a knee replacement. You need to be rehabilitated, and any device that you may need, crutch, cane, et cetera. Laboratory services. Okay, now all these things my insurance company covers already. It's nothing new. Preventative and wellness services and chronic disease management. Pediatric services, including oral and vision care. Now, do you see anything in that list, Paula, that would fall under the category of abortion pills, contraception, or sterilization?
No.
I don't see anything there. Maternity and newborn care, that's got nothing to do with abortion. Laboratory, rehabilitative, prescription drugs. Oh, there you go, prescription drugs. So contraception are drugs, okay, but it doesn't specify what prescription drugs. So number one, insurance companies do cover prescription drugs, okay? Some insurance policies may not cover certain drugs, though. And if they don't, well, that's, you know, you're paying less money for a service that doesn't cover every single drug that's out there, because some drugs are very expensive. Now, let's say that you, Paula, own an insurance company, and you are a strict Catholic, and you don't believe in contraception, you don't believe especially in abortion pills, et cetera, then you and your insurance company may not cover that because that goes against your religious and personal beliefs. The president has decided that that doesn't matter, that your conscience and your religion take second seat to determining that under prescription drugs, that those drugs, those particular drugs, have to be covered. So that's where this assault on religion is coming from. This very ambiguous prescription drugs could mean anything and everything. I mean, does it mean Viagra? Well, why doesn't the president come out and say, and all insurance companies and insurance providers must provide Viagra for free? I mean, I realize that there's a difference between Viagra and contraception, and I'm not opposed to contraception. Don't get me wrong on this. I'm not a Catholic. But if I were an employer hiring people and I said I'm not going to pay an insurance company that provides, you know, abortion services, abortion pills, you know, morning after pills, on and on and on, because that violates my religious beliefs. But then the president of the United States, when it's not even specified in this bill, comes out and says, oh, yes, you will. This is very simple, very, very simple to change. And any piece of legislation could have an amendment added to it that says, oh, by the way, when we say prescription drugs in the Obamacare bill, we don't mean abortion pills and contraception or whatever. I mean, they can do whatever they want. And then it becomes the law of the land, and he cannot violate the law of the land. Remember, he has to faithfully execute and ensure that. So the problem is this bill did not specify these things. So they're wide open for interpretation. And nowhere in this bill does it say that these things must be provided for free. So he's gone way beyond his constitutional authority, way, way beyond it. That's where he gets his authority, is the Constitution, to ensure that the laws are faithfully executed, but he is not faithfully executing them. Therefore, he is violating the Constitution. This guy comes up with new ways to violate the Constitution every week. It's amazing. So,
why is it considered – I'm curious as to why it would be considered an attack on the individual liberties, though. I think I'm a little confused about that.
Okay. Let's say you're an employer, Paula. And everybody you hire, you tell them, I'm going to provide health care for you. But what I am opposed to is providing certain types of services that include abortion. So if you have a problem with that, then seek employment elsewhere. Okay? There are people that are very, very strict about this stuff and will not just, you know, provide any old health care to their employees. They don't want to. Now, that they're not trying to dictate. They're not telling their employees, you can't have an abortion. What they're telling their employees is, I'm just not going to pay for it. See what I'm saying? So what he has basically told all small businesses and large businesses and religious institutions is, I don't care what your beliefs are, you're going to do this because I believe it's the right thing.
But didn't
now,
didn't the health insurance companies, regardless of what just came about with this whole issue, hadn't they offered the insurance that covered the contraception and the abortion pills before?
Well, some do. Some do, but they don't have to. That's the thing. Currently, they don't have to. If they want to, they can. Okay? And then what happens is, you know, well, think about like a Catholic university, okay? And it's got all kinds of employers.
Right.
And that Catholic university says, we will not be providing insurance. In fact, some employers self-insure. In other words, they don't purchase insurance from an insurance company. They just self-insure. They put pools of money away every month or every year to cover expenses as they arise, and they just pay for it straight up. So if you were working at a Catholic university or a Catholic hospital and you decided you wanted contraceptive pills, the university would say to you, yeah, go buy them out in open market. Go do whichever you want. But we're not going to cover the cost with you doing just a simple copay like you would for other prescription drugs. So it attacks the religious institutions, but it also is an assault on individuals, individual business owners, small business owners.
Hmm.
Yeah, does that make sense? Because if it doesn't, we'll discuss it some more because I want to make sure it's clear to everybody.
It does, and it doesn't. I think my issue is that I don't think it should be anybody's business, whether it's a religious institution or not, that you've got that coverage. What it covers is none of the institution's business, if I'm thinking
that. Well, it is.
That right.
The institution's paying for it. So it's every bit of their business what they're paying for.
I don't know. Yes and no, I guess. I'm kind of on the fence about that because what I do outside of the institution is my business because I'm helping pay. I may be helping pay for that health insurance. They may be covering 80% and I'm covering 20%.
Yeah, but don't you see that the religious institution doesn't care what you do on your own time? They don't care if you go and get an abortion. They don't care. I mean, they may care, but they can't do anything about it.
But they're not going to cover it.
But they don't want to pay for it. In other words, you may make the choice that violates their religious precepts, but they don't want to be paying for it. For example, let's say you went to your health insurance or your company and you said, listen, I like to drink alcohol and smoke cigarettes. I want you to pay for it as a benefit. What would they say? No, we're not going to pay for it. And they don't have to. I mean, just because the insurance is yours, it's yours because they grant it to you as a benefit. There are plenty of employers that do not insure their employees, especially part-time employees.
Correct.
And that's because they choose not to. You know, so the reality is you could, under Obamacare, tell your employer, I want out of your employee-run health insurance, and I'm going to go to the government. And the government will cover me for these things, and I'll pay into the government system. That's the possibility. But to tell every single individual out there, we don't care what your religious beliefs are. We don't care if this violates your religious beliefs. Too bad. We know better than you. So that's really the problem with this. It's not even – forget about it being insurance. What if the government came to you and said, we know what's best for you, and Paula – pizza is not good for you. You are never going to eat pizza again. Sorry, because we know better than you. There's no end to this. That is just personal liberty and personal choice, let alone religious freedom. What if the government comes to you and says, listen, Paula, you know, you spend too much time at church. You go all day on Sunday. You go a couple times during the week. That's not really necessary because, and look, these are the kind of excuses that the libtards are using, because the vast majority of people at most – attend 1 hour a week of church. So you're going way, way beyond. We're going to restrict your church attendance to 2 hours a week.
Right.
See, it's all the same thing. It's government telling you what you must do, period. Now, interesting, Rush Limbaugh today said that in 2008, and I forgot to look for it, we'll do it on tomorrow night's show, Obama in 2008, because Hillary had tried coming up with a universal health care system when her husband was president. And so to distinguish himself from Hillary and make her look bad, he said that he felt an individual mandate, in other words, mandating that all individuals in the U.S. will have health care insurance or we will penalize you, was unconstitutional. So in 2008, he called it unconstitutional. But today, he calls it constitutional. So which is it, unconstitutional or constitutional? Well, he's a hypocrite and a liar. That's the bottom line. Our president is a liar. He'll say whatever it takes to get elected or reelected, et cetera. At the time, what it was taking to make Hillary look bad was to claim that her ideas on health care were unconstitutional. But as soon as he becomes president, now it's totally constitutional because I won. It doesn't work that way, unfortunately. It just doesn't work that way. So in any case, I mean, have we hit that one hard enough?
I think so.
Okay. Well, I saw in the news that we're gonna come on to a couple other things about the economy, where Obama really is lying to us. He's continued to lie to us about the economy. But first off, in the news, $800 million for Arab Spring. He wants an extra $800 million to go to some of the countries, particularly Egypt, for their Arab Spring.
For what?
To help them pay for, you know, remember all the destruction that went on in Egypt during the fighting and everything, and even in Libya as well. He wants to give them some money we don't have because we're just printing money.
Oh my God, has he lost his mind?
Yeah, $800 million, almost $1 billion to help them out. Yeah.
I think some people here in this country could use that, like to shovel themselves out of debt from their homes that they're losing. Mother of God.
Right.
Are you kidding me?
$800 million for the Arab Spring, which is turning out to really be the Muslim Brotherhood because they came out on top. They're the winners there. So we're going to shovel money that way because we want to buy their favors. But, $800 million for Arab Spring rebuilding. Besides all the money, we give them like a billion and a half already.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. His chief of staff is a moron. His chief of staff the other day said that it's going to be difficult to get the president's budget, you know, passed because the Senate needs 60 votes, and they don't have 60 Democrats in the Senate anymore, so it's unlikely that we can get the president's budget passed through the Senate. Well, it doesn't take – the budget process does not require 60 votes in the Senate. It only requires 51. It's a simple majority. So the president's new chief of staff is an idiot and doesn't understand the budget process. Good job, O'Bumbler. Well, that's the thing. He hires people like him that are stupid and don't know anything about, you know, government and business. So there we go. So the president, he can't make up his mind whether it's constitutional or unconstitutional. And he hires people that don't even know the government process, his chief of staff. That's a good one. Good one. What else in the news? I saw an interview where John Whiteman of Goldman Sachs was talking about the economy and saying that in reality our economy is worse than the Depression. Now, the reason I say this is because back in 2008, when Obama was running, and I've got it right here, I'm going to read it, that we have the worst crisis since the Great Depression. Obama said it himself. I'm going to read it to you. But here's the guy, the former head of Goldman Sachs, on TV talking about, hey, we're not just the worst recession since the Great Depression. We're actually worse off than the Great Depression right now. It's just not come quite fully to light. Now, did he turn out to be right about that? I don't think so. But there were people talking about it. But Obama recently said that nobody knew. And he said that nobody knew how bad things really were. Well, there's a guy from Goldman Sachs right on MSNBC talking about it. And the president himself knew. Here's what I'm going to read. This is October 7th, 2008. Democrat presidential candidate Barack Obama said on Tuesday that the United States is in the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression. And he said that, I guess, in a debate with John McCain. And here's the exact quote. We are in the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression. And a lot of you think, and I think a lot of you are worried about your jobs, your pensions, your retirement accounts. Well, there you have it. He said it in 2008. The worst economy economy, the worst crisis since the Great Depression. But what did he say yesterday on TV? He said, nobody knew it was that bad. Wait a minute. As bad as it is. So wait a minute. If in 2008 he thought it was the worst crisis since the Great Depression, but it turned out to be worse than that, then what was it? Another depression? No, it wasn't. It wasn't. And just to give you an idea of some of the differences between the recession that Reagan inherited versus the ones that Obama inherited, when Reagan took over in 1980, inflation was at 13.5%. What was it when Obama took over? 0%. The unemployment rate under Reagan at the time was 7.5%. Obama, 7.6%. So just almost dead even. Growth from the previous year when Reagan took over, minus 0.27%. Obama at zero. So it wasn't even in the negative range. Pretty close, but still not as bad. And what, here's the kicker, what was the prime bank interest rate in 1980? 18.5%. What was it when Obama took over? 3.25%. Low interest rates can make a huge difference. That's how bad things were when Reagan took over. So Obama says, worst since the Great Depression. He was not only wrong, but he knew what the situation was. And now he's saying, hey, it's not my fault. Nobody knew. Well, we got people on TV talking about it back then. So everybody knew what it was, he himself. But here's sort of the kicker when you look at gold. Gold prices are often the bellwether and commentary on the foibles and successes of those in power in the United States. As the dollar is the de facto global reserve currency, and American has been the dominant economy and military power since World War II. So when gold goes up, that tells you what the value of the dollar is, and that tells you what folks who are running our government are doing to us. So gold recently reached $1,600 per ounce. That's a historic high in terms of raw dollars, but as far as inflation adjusted, in January 21st, 1980, gold hit $850 per ounce, but adjusted to 2011 prices, it's the equivalent of $2,328, more than the price of gold today per ounce, adjusted. So when Reagan took over, our dollar was worth less than it is today. But Obama keeps saying that he inherited the worst economy since the Great Depression. Not true. And then he tries to, at the same time, tell us, oh, I had no idea it was so bad. It's not my fault. Remember, I bring this up all the time on the show, the definition of, self-serving bias. Self-serving bias is somebody that takes credit for their successes but blames their failures on someone else. This guy just spent 5 minutes as he was talking about the economy and how he had promised he would cut the deficit in half and why he wasn't able to, making excuses, 5 minutes of excuses, including nobody had any idea how bad things were. Well, this tells me two things, Paula. He's either completely incompetent, which I know for a fact, or he's a liar. And we know that too. But in this case, I don't think it's that he's a liar. I think it's the fact that he's incompetent. Paula, if you were running a business and you hired somebody to take care of a financial situation or anything, doesn't matter what it was, who said, oh, I can do that, I got great ideas, and 3 years later, things, the area, the department that person you hired are worse off than they were 3 years ago. And then that person had the gall to say, oh, well, I had no idea things were as bad as they were. It's not my fault. You'd fire them on the spot, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I would. You'd fire them on the spot. And yet this president continues to make excuses for his failures. Two summers ago, the White House told us it was the summer of recovery. The recession is over. We're out of it. Everything's getting better. And that wasn't the case. Unemployment actually went up more. And the growth of the economy went down. So when this president says something's going on, like things are getting better, how can we believe him? His track record is he's failed on everything he said he would do. Every single thing he said he would do, he's failed. Unemployment is higher. And we talked about this before, but you know what? They're thinking about extending unemployment Do you know what extending unemployment will do? Well, it will keep more people on the government's unemployment rolls, which means they'll continue to be calculated. We had 1.2 million people drop off of unemployment last month. That's why the unemployment rate went down, not because they got employed, because they're not counted anymore. You have to be on unemployment to be counted. And as more and more people go off of unemployment but don't have jobs, the unemployment stays just as high and gets maybe even higher, but they're not counted. So this is the trickery that this administration is using, the lies that they're using to cover their failures. An article in, it was actually on Reuters, Obama. I read that one. Where is it? Oh, this is an American Thinker, and the one that I was giving you the numbers about Reagan and, whatever. And let me tell you who wrote this article, because I should be given credit for this. It was in July of 2011 by Steve McCann. It's entitled "The Worst Steward of the Economy in American History." The job facing Reagan was the most daunting since the Great Depression, and far worse than what Barack Obama inherited in 2009. But what has Obama done? He's gone after, he's attempted repeatedly to raise taxes. He's stopped every effort to get off of energy dependence from other countries. No drilling here, there, anywhere. And that's harmed us. And you know what he's doing? He's taking credit for the usage of oil, foreign oil going down. The reason is the economy. People are trying to drive as little as possible and carpooling and other things. He has not passed one piece of legislation, got one piece of legislation passed, or one executive order based on existing law that has done anything to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. The dependence drop is simply because of economics, and yet he's somehow taking credit for that. And what he's really saying is, thanks to the bad economy and me being an incompetent president, hey, we're not importing as much oil. You people are driving less because you have less money. You can thank me for that. You can thank me for not having a job. You can thank me for all these things. And look at that. The imports of oil are down. What an idiot. I mean, really, quite honestly. But Americans don't look into those numbers. They go, we're importing less oil? It's because of the economy. Not one thing that he has done as president has changed that. So, the last thing, when Carter left office, just before, when Reagan took over, the gross federal debt as a percentage of GDP was 33%. He never recorded an annual deficit higher than 2.65%. When George Bush left office, the debt ratio was 69%. His highest annual deficit was 3.48%. On the other hand, by the end of the Obama term, the debt will be nearly 100% of everything everybody in this country makes. The annual budget deficit in 2011 is projected to be 11% of everything that's produced. Just the annual debt is going to be 11% of everything produced in our country. The United States as a nation is 220 years old, yet over one-third of the nation's debt will have been accumulated by Barack Obama in just 4 years. And he keeps telling us he's doing a good job. This guy is a miserable, miserable failure. All right. I've hammered that enough. Paula, you sent me something. You emailed me something about Iran today. What was that article?
I did. It was that Iran issues threat to Europe oil buyers. I can't put my hands on the exact article that I sent you, but I did come across one, I believe, that is similar to it with what's going on there. Besieged by international anti-nuclear sanctions over the Iranian nuclear program, including a planned oil embargo by Europe, Iran warned its six largest European buyers today they risked immediate cutoffs in their Iranian oil imports. Iran's official Islamic Republic news agency said the warning was conveyed to the ambassadors of Italy, Spain, France, the Netherlands, Greece, and Portugal in separate meetings at the foreign ministry in Tehran. Officials said an earlier report by Press TV, Iran's state-financed satellite broadcaster, that Iran had already cut supplies to the six countries was inaccurate, but not before word of the Press TV report sent a brief shudder through the global oil market, sending prices up slightly. Iran warns Europe it will find other customers for its oil. and European people should know that if Iran changes destinations of the oil it gives to them, the responsibility will rest with the European governments themselves. The EU decided last month to impose an oil embargo on Iran, one of the world's leading petroleum exporters, as of July the 1st, as part of a coordinated campaign of Western sanctions aimed at pressuring Iran to halt its disputed uranium enrichment program, and the Europeans have been making arrangements since then to find other sources of supply. The combination of sanctions, including severe restraints on Iran's ability to conduct routine banking and shipping operations, have caused severe disruptions to Iran's economy, as the nuclear program has emerged as an increasingly acrimonious issue between Iran and the rest. The Iranian warning came on a day of mixed messages emanating from Iran's hierarchy about its nuclear program, which Western nations and Israel have called a cover for Iranian attempts to become capable of making a weapon. Iran has said the program is peaceful. At the same time, Iran was warning its biggest European oil buyers. Tehran also announced what it called big advances in its nuclear program and delivered a letter to Catherine Ashton, who is the EU's top foreign policy official, regarding efforts to reopen talks on the nuclear issue that were suspended more than a year ago. In Tehran, President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad presided over ceremonies to mark advances in Iran's nuclear program, partly to project an image of Iranian defiance against the Western sanctions. The new advances include centrifuges capable of enriching uranium at a much faster rate and the insertion of the first domestically produced nuclear fuel rod into a nuclear reactor in Tehran. The era of bullying nations has passed. The arrogant powers cannot monopolize nuclear technology. They tried to prevent us by issuing sanctions and resolutions but failed, Ahmadinejad had said in a televised broadcast of the ceremony. Iran's nuclear announcements came as tensions have escalated, in particular with Israel, which regards Iran as an existential threat and has hinted at the possibility of a preemptive military strike on Iran's nuclear facilities to forestall its suspected ambitions.
Well, you know, Iran's track record on this stuff is pretty poor. For example, remember in the beginning they said they were going to mine the Straits of Hormuz so that nobody could get oil in and out of the Persian Gulf? And what the media forgets is they tried that in 1986, and we shut them down. Our military shut them down almost immediately and stopped them from doing any more of that. I was there. I know. I saw it happen firsthand. They're completely incompetent and incapable of doing these things. Now, as far as not shipping to these European countries were going to impose that very thing, no oil from Iran, this summer. All Iran is doing is saying, oh, yeah, well, then we'll just stop shipping it to you right now, you know, knowing that they're unprepared and trying to scare them. Does Iran actually think it can really find buyers for its oil? One of the things that Iran has is heavy crude, which requires a special refining process. And they can't refine it themselves. They're not capable of refining their oil, and they don't necessarily want to do it. But only a few countries, really, in the world can refine that kind of oil, just like Venezuela. There are only a few select refineries in the world that are capable of that. So they really can't ship it anywhere else. They can only ship it to the countries that are capable of refining it. So it's baloney. And the media, they talk about this now because they're not smart enough to know about this stuff, but it's a fact. You know, there really are very few places they can ship it, and I don't believe China is one of them. And, you know, China would try to get its hands on any oil it can. But changing those shipping routes, but just who they're selling to, is not something you can just – I mean, you could do it overnight, but it's they'll just be stuck with the oil. They won't have any income from it, and they're hurting, as you said in that article already, from all these other sanctions. They really can't afford to not have that money. So they're going to have to come to some kind of a deal, some kind of an agreement. The problem is they'll lie. They'll say, okay, we'll stop our, you know, building nuclear weapons, which they say claim they're never not doing anyway. And now they have the ability to, you know, create their own fissionable material. They showed that off today. I think somebody, and I don't want to name any countries, is going to go blow the crap out of them here pretty soon because, you know, Israel just had an attack on some of their, I can't remember what country that was, but some of their diplomats. And it turns out that it was Iranians that were doing it. So Israel is one of those countries that retaliates. They don't just sit back and take it. They retaliate. And I think they're going to do it. I mean, just think about if we found that some Iranians funded by the Iranian government had blown up something in the United States, we'd have to retaliate. We'd have to, and we would. So I think there's going to be some retaliation coming, and it's not going to be pretty for the Iranians in terms of their nuclear capability right now. That's probably going to go away for a few years at least, and some of their military bases as well may vaporize. Who knows? I don't know. I have no inside information, so don't take don't take my word for it, but it's happened in the past, and it's probably going to happen again in the future sometime. So anyway, well, tomorrow night we're going to be broadcasting. Of course, you'll be broadcasting from Boston, Paul, but I'm going to be broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas. Yes, in the heart of Dallas, Texas. And so I look forward to that. I won't be able to, of course, it's chilly there. I won't be able to sit on any patio and broadcast like I am right now in Florida where it's 76 degrees on my back patio. I think it's going to hit a high of 59, which to me, I know, Paul, you'd probably be putting on shorts and tank top, but to me, that's really cold. Like 59 degrees, I'd be freezing my butt off. So anyway, you can always tell the local Floridians, local Floridians, because when it does dip below 70 degrees, we're wearing jackets and, you know, that kind of stuff. And the tourists or the snowbirds are walking around in shorts and T-shirts, but not me. In fact, we got down to about 61 degrees the other night, and I had to put the heating blanket on.
Wow, you got mud in your blood, man.
I get cold, man. I'm like a lizard, you know. I got to have warm weather. I can't move.
You got to get a down comforter on that bed.
Well, there was. Yeah, I had a down comforter on top of the heating blanket.
Oh, dear. Good Lord. He'd never survive.
I've gotten soft. Gotten really soft, so that's why I hate going to cold places. You know, I'll probably go to the get to the hotel tomorrow and just stay inside the whole day.
Got to be the age.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm getting old. Feel it in my bones. I want to let everybody know we're going to be working on putting together an online fundraiser for Joan Flowers. We're not going to be able to get any politicians or the military, it appears, to help move her war hero father from an unmarked grave in Chicago to Arlington. So we're going to have to do that. I'll have more details and a website up here within the next few weeks. Also, anybody out there listening, if you know of a military contractor, somebody that, you know, deals with the military, send me an email. Of course, you can go to usaradionetwork.com, and our email address is there. You can Twitter us, that kind of thing. But I've got an idea, and I have some contacts, but just in case, somebody that would like to have media exposure, political exposure, you know, with local and federal level politicians and veterans. We're looking at putting possibly some fundraisers together at some large VFWs. And if somebody is looking for some, like I said, some media attention or advertising attention, that's going to be a great way to get it. And let me know. But that's one of our possible plans right there, is to try and reach out and combine organizations that want exposure, media exposure, as well as reach the veterans community with the VFW helping us put on a fundraiser and so forth. And then get some of the local politicians, because whenever there's a large VFW that's got an event with a campaign season coming up, that's when the candidates and the politicians come out of the woodwork to shake hands and say how much they support the troops. So that's going to be going on Twitter. Be sure and follow us on Twitter at the American Hour. Some of the stuff I put out here, the article that I read talked about tonight, O'Bumbler, the worst steward of the economy in American history. Put a link to that article. Did you see the news today? Another solar company went out of business, and you've got Obama's spokespeople saying that, oh, he's, you know, he's about everything, gas, oil, and solar and green technologies. Everything that, that this administration sinks money into that supposedly is green keeps going out of business. If I had a green company, Paula, of any kind, or any kind of energy company, and I heard that the president wants to come, you know, shake hands and do a media thing, I'd say, no, you're not coming. We're going to, you know, send everybody home. We don't want you here, because everywhere he goes, those companies go under, out of business. None of them seem to be able to stay alive. He's got the turn to stone touch there, I guess.
Right.
Let's see, what else I put on Twitter? Incompetent in chief. I didn't understand how bad it was going to get. There's a link to that article. I said, yeah, you're fired. Anybody that came up with an excuse like that at any business or in the military would be fired on the spot. Can we rely on the executive branch for unsullied data? And this is talking about the economy and the jobless reports, et cetera. There's a link to that. Absolutely not. And then another interesting article on Obama chooses to scare the bear, violating time-tested liberal principles by some of his statements on the economy. So there's a link to that. Let's see. Oh, the case for White House incompetence. Chief of staff, and I put equals a chief of stupidity. I mean, I already talked about that. He doesn't understand the basics of the budget process. Another article, Barack Obama in the footsteps of 20th century despots. Another article, the most corrupt, dictatorial, ideologically driven president in American history. Oh, and the Obama campaign has launched truth teams. They want to put together average Americans to get trained on spreading the truth. And once this takes place, we can rename these truth teams lie teams, because that's what they're going to be doing. If they're spouting out the Obama campaign talking points, it'll all be lies. Here we go. A link to that article we talked about that got you worked up. Obama proposes $800 million in aid for Arab Spring. And I said, I see a U.S. Spring coming. That means getting rid of this guy. So anyway, lots of good stuff there that we tweet out in case you didn't catch it in the news. I try and find things that you're not going to find in the mainstream media and Fox News and put it on there so that you can be better informed. Anything else, Paula?
Yeah, I just came across something over here on Twitter that I'm looking at that's got me a little befuzzled or befuddled. Barack Obama, I guess I must have picked him up by following him just to see what he would be saying. It's at Barack Obama. He's saying that January was the 23rd consecutive month of job growth. And when you go to click on the link, it brings you to this. I was just going to send it to you and ask, what is he smoking now? It's his Obama. It's www.barackobama.com, and it's his jobs record, private sector job creation graph. It's kind of a joke. Anyways, I mean, I don't know how real it is to say that there were 23 consecutive months of job growth when so many of us were unemployed for such a long period of time.
Yeah, they cooked the numbers, and that's what that article that I said on here, I'll scroll down again, but on my Twitter feed there, you find, let's see, well, I just read it. The case for White House incompetence, no. Can we rely on the executive branch for unsullied data? Of course not. They're cooking the books. Look, if you claim that you created part-time jobs, and that's what he's taking into account some of the part-time jobs, you know, the seasonal jobs. He's counting anything and everything he can get his hands on. But long-term, full-time, actual jobs, real jobs, that has been going down and down and down. There's been no job growth. There's been job shrinkage. There are less people with jobs now than there were when he took over. If you just take all of the fully employed people in America, that number, it's less than when he took over. So there can't be job growth. It's a bunch of baloney. But what they're going to do is, like, when they did the census, they counted all those as new jobs. Well, you know, 6 weeks later, those people no longer had a job, but they counted that as job growth. But they're no longer have those jobs. So you should then take it away from them. But they don't ever take anything away. They just kind of keep stacking up and stacking up the numbers when, in fact, That's not the way it works. So, no, it's another lie. And, of course, you won't find, you will not find, except on his website, any of these numbers. Nobody else in the world is reporting that job growth is up in the United States of America. Nobody. Because they're not, they're false numbers. So, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, send me a link to that. I'll check it out. Well, maybe we'll talk about that tomorrow night, and I'll get the real numbers.
Just send it.
Okay.
Things that
right,
make me...
Yeah, exactly. Well, Paula, you want to take us out here with your tribute to veterans tonight?
I will do that, and I will do a special shout-out to Bravo Company, 1st Battalion, 8th Marines, serving in Afghanistan, specifically to Jonathan, who is the son of my schoolmate, Don Alto Stukas. Your mama, she loves and misses you and wants you home real soon. We're going to do Honoring the Fallen, where the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq claimed the lives of more than 450 Americans this year, bringing the U.S. death toll to more than 6,300 since 2001. Five names that I will read are Michael Joe Beckerman, 25, Christopher Roger Bell, 21, Vincent James Bell, 28, Nicholas Price Billard, 26, and Alexander James Bennett, 24. Going over to the site militarytimes.com, I came across Marine Staff Sergeant Vincent J. Bell, who perished November the 30th, 2011, serving during Operation Enduring Freedom. He was assigned to the 2nd Battalion, 11th Marines, 1st Marine Division in Camp Pendleton, California. He died November the 30th in Helmand Province, Afghanistan, while conducting combat operations. He joined the service months before September the 11th. He was from the Detroit area, and he was killed in Afghanistan and was on his second combat deployment when he was hit by an improvised explosive device. The Pentagon listed his hometown as Detroit, but a later release from Camp Pendleton said he was from the Detroit suburb of Wayne. Bell, who bravely gave his life in service to our state and nation, California Governor Jerry Brown said in a statement that also ordered U.S. flags lowered statewide in his honor that Friday. The governor and first lady had extended their deepest condolences to his family and friends, and he was on foot patrol when he was wounded. It was his award. It is said that his awards include the Purple Heart and the Navy and Marine Corps Achievement Medal. He began serving in the Marine Corps on July the 9th, 2001. He was based at Camp Pendleton and part of the 2nd Battalion, 11th Marines, 1st Marine Division, 1 Marine Expeditionary Force, and he served in Iraq and Afghanistan. You are missed by your family, I am sure, and you are in everyone's prayers.
Oh. All right. Is that it?
That is it.
All right. Well, everybody, thanks, Paul. I appreciate that. Everybody will be back on the air tomorrow. I know it's not on the website yet because I wasn't sure if I was going to be flying or not, but I'm going to be in Dallas, Texas. So live from Dallas, Texas. Of course, Paula, live from Boston, Massachusetts. And we will see you tomorrow night. Thanks for joining us. And we'll talk some more about the administration's job numbers and how they're cooked. Good night, Paula.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.